Episode 57, The Incredible Hulk.
Welcome to Level 7. A podcast about Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's a magical place.
Hello, fellow agents. It's Agent Daniel Butcher, back here at the Hub.
And this is Agent Ben, and I'm ready to talk about some stuff, man.
And we're so ready, and there's so much stuff. Let's dispense with the chit-chat and just go straight into...
What? No chit-chat?
No chit-chat. I'm all about business.
Well, let's get into it then, I guess.
How you make it to level 8 is you be about business. So let us go to the intelligence report.
But wait, shouldn't we tell people what we're talking about in this episode?
Fine.
Okay, this episode we're talking about The Incredible Hulk. I just think it's good to tell people up front what they're going to hear.
Dude, I was being stealth, okay?
Okay.
Stealth.
All right.
Intelligence report.
Let's do it.
S.H.I.E.L.D. intelligence report.
Well, I don't know if they're picking up on the fact, Ben, that I'm just icy to you tonight.
There's a lot to talk about.
I'm not even a hot mess about it. I'm just icy.
Why are you icy? Why aren't you happy for me?
Because it's Batman Day.
It is Batman Day that we're recording on Wednesday here.
Much better Batman Day than I had.
Oh, I don't know how you could say that. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm just going to say it was the best for me was National Hot Dog Day.
Well,
sure, I got a free comic. I even picked up one for a friend in Indiana, but apparently he doesn't need it.
Well, I picked up my own. So, yeah, we got a lot to talk about here. We have some dates to talk about. Daniel, does September 23rd mean anything to you?
September 23rd.
Yes, September 23rd. Mark your calendar because it's an important date. Do you know why it's an important date?
It's an important date because good old AC is going to be back.
He is. He is, Daniel. That is the... premiere date for season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's pretty awesome.
That means we can just take August off.
I'm not planning on it, but...
No, I'm not either. I've got this DVD over here I have to watch, so...
Wait, does that DVD have some red, white, and blue on it?
It makes me feel like an American. Sorry, yeah. Friends across the ocean in Gotham City. I'm an American... per my DVD.
Yes, indeedy do. So, we will be talking about some more TV stuff in the upcoming episodes, but we're talking about Incredible Hulk stuff today. However, the premiere date, September 23rd, that is the premiere of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 2, which is good because that gives us almost 2 weeks. No, exactly 2 weeks because we all got our DVDs or Blu-rays on September 9th. So it'll give us time to maybe do an episode about the extra features. I don't know. In between there. But yeah.
I just gotta get Mrs. Butcher out of the house so I can watch those.
Oh, that's so
yikes.
Sad.
All right. What else you got for me?
What else do we have here? Okay. August 21st through 24th is Chicago Wizard World. And I will be there. At a table. So if anybody is going to come to Chicago Wizard World, please stop by my table and say hi. I would really, really appreciate and enjoy that. So I don't know my table number yet, but I think we'll record another episode or two between now and then. So I might know it then. But Chicago Wizard World, August 21st through 24th. Be there or don't be there. But if you do be there, please say hi to me.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, almost makes sense anyway. Okay. What else do we have here?
Well, we got more dates.
Okay, tell me about these other dates.
Well, Welcome to Level 7's been picked up through 2019.
That is true.
Because
there's movies at least through that time.
So, and things have changed a little bit. So initially it was announced on July 18th. Dates for movies on July 28th and November 3rd, 2017, July 6th and November 2nd, 2018, and May 3rd, 2019. May just seems like a good time for an Avengers movie, don't you think?
It does. It feels like a great time for an Avengers movie.
But wait, there's more.
I'm listening.
Okay. May 4th, 2018, we'll see another MCU movie in addition to the two already announced that year.
Yeah, three in 1 year.
Three in 1 year. So there's a lot of things in the horizon. We know Doctor Strange is coming. We know Avengers 3 is coming. We know a Thor 3 is coming.
We know Ant-Man is coming. Captain America 3 is coming. We know, well, Guardians of the Galaxy obviously is coming.
But I'm just hoping maybe San Diego Comic-Con, we maybe get another name dropped.
It'd be nice. I think it'd be fun. It'd be interesting and it'd be exciting because as much as I like seeing the movies are coming, I like knowing what movies are coming more.
Well, so. And I guess everybody will know soon enough because based on what happened to us last year, we did a San Diego Comic-Con episode. We'll probably do one again this year.
Probably.
And hopefully we'll be a little bit more upbeat and a little less Batman.
I don't know. Batman's getting you down, man. I don't understand why Batman Day is getting you down.
Every time I say Batman, it hurts my heart.
Don't understand. I'm so confused. So we've got those dates. We're excited about those dates. What else do we have here? Oh, we've got some casting news. casting news for season 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
All right. Why don't we go with the vague one first?
The vague one is really vague. Okay. So here's the vague one. They are... Well, season 2 has announced a new character. And basically, I shouldn't say they've announced a new character. They have put out a casting call for a character. Ruggedly handsome, physically fit.
Yes.
To play a character who can escape any situation.
Yes.
Is a bit of a wild card. And though he's mostly interested in personal gain, always ends up doing the right thing.
It's like they've put me in a box.
That's right.
They're sending me to California.
They're trying to encapsulate the Daniel Butcher essence and bring it to TV. Who do you want to play you, Daniel?
If I was to have someone play me, well, Hugh Jackman's too recognizable. Weird Al Yankovic's hair's too long.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Ricky Lambert.
See, I was going to cast Bill Pullman.
He's going to have to shave, though. Pullman would be nice.
Yeah.
He's a little old, though. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, he's an actor. He can play young.
He can play. Oh, you didn't say Zac Efron. That would have been nice.
Zac Efron's just not even a person on my radar. But I do know who was going to play me. One of two people.
William Shatner?
One of three people. One of three people. One of four, if you include Stan Lee. Stan Lee's next cameo is going to be as a podcaster named Ben Avery, talking about all the stuff that's going on.
That
in the
would be
universe.
Hilarious if he was a podcaster cameo, and you could make that work in the MCU.
Oh, yeah, easily. And all of us podcasters could claim him if they didn't give him a name.
Yeah.
But The Rock or Ryan Reynolds.
Very nice. Yeah, very nice.
But anyway, that's it's supposed to be. I mean, it's interesting. It just tells us they're casting people. We already knew that. This tells us nothing about who the character could be, because I look at that and I think to myself, there are a lot of characters who kind of are described by that. And plus, in the MCU, the description that you give a character doesn't necessarily match the comic book description of the character and the character's motivations. So, meanwhile, there's another casting bit of news.
That we know she's coming to the show.
Yes, but who is she going to be? Well, tell us who it is first.
Well, genre legend Lucy Lawless.
Yes.
Coming to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The former star of Xena, that warrior princess. Give that girl a sword.
Also, Battlestar Galactica.
And give her a sword again on Spartacus. She's coming to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, so who do you think, Daniel?
So I know who you're going to say, so I'm going to go with someone that she's not, but it would be interesting. Runsicker, okay. Agent Runsicker. Female agent, strong, tough. We've seen a version of her before, just not in the MCU. Classic S.H.I.E.L.D. agent.
Okay.
But But I'm guessing it's not her.
I'm going to go with Dazzler.
I expect you to say She-Hulk.
Actually, I would say She-Hulk, but I am only going to say She-Hulk by saying that's actually Bud Rogers who said that first. It didn't even cross my mind, honestly.
Well, he only should have, he only shares a comic with you, so it's not like we have to give him credit.
Yeah, well, he's an artist friend of mine. He's actually an editor of mine too. And
here's the problem, Ben. When we go to couples counseling over what happened today, what? And my wife is very uncomfortable about this. Bud doesn't get to come.
Bud's a helpful guy, man.
Yeah. He's not coming to couples counseling with us.
Okay, well, I'm fine with that since I don't think I'll be going. But okay, yeah. Yeah, we're good.
Why won't you work on our relationship?
I think we need to move on to less awkward topics.
Hey, speaking of awkward, let's talk about what's going on with Marvel movies and other studios.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
That's a great setup.
That wasn't the direction I was going to go in, by the way. The Bud Rogers connection was going to take me into another thing that we need to announce. But okay, let's go here. Okay. So there's been a lot of talk about Fantastic Four. Kate Mara was talking about Fantastic Four, and she basically said that the Fantastic Four movie won't be based on the comic book, and that she was told not to read any comic books because nothing from the comic books were going to be in there, and people are going off about it and everything. And then other people are saying, well, you're taking her out of context, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Yeah, she said, someone asked her if she liked comics. I think this is for, yeah, Esquire Latin America. She said, I've never been a fan of comics. I've never actually read one. I was going to for this movie, but the director said it wasn't necessary. Well, actually, he told us that we shouldn't do it because the plot won't be based on any history of anything already published. So I chose to follow his instructions. The one fact is I'm a fan of comic book movies, so it's very exciting to be a part of a movie like this. Okay, Michael B. Jordan, who's playing Johnny Storm. I don't know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, he's playing Johnny Storm.
No, I was going to go in a direction that we don't need to go in. He said, then, that the characters that they're playing are basically disabled people. He says it's not your typical superhero movie. And he said, the script is evolving. You make set decisions on the fly. Things are always constantly changing. Me, personally, I block out that extra noise and I focus on the job I have to do. It is an important film for all of us. We're taking it seriously, taking a lot of risks. I think it's going to pay off. It's not your typical superhero film, you know. We aren't looking at this as being superheroes. We're more or less a bunch of kids that had an accident and we have disabilities now that we have to cope with and try to find a life afterwards. Try to be as normal as we can. I mean, we've just got layers.
We're the Daredevil
Four.
We're
trying to make it relatable to people as much as we can with these larger-than-life, larger-than-this-world themes. It's like an onion. We've got layers. And yes, I can fly and create flame, but it's a disability, not a super ability. And yeah, you know, she can turn invisible and make force shields and stuff like that and do things that actually have no change at all to her outside appearance, but it's not a super ability, it's a disability. And yeah, the Thing, he's super strong, but he's ugly now. And everyone knows ugliness is a disability in this world. And then there's Reed Richards, who's stretchy. He's stretchy. He goes back to his original form, but he's stretchy. So obviously, disability, not super ability.
Now, let's be fair. I'm going to pull one of these out. With Ben Grimm, it is fair to say that he is a character who has to look at a disability because accommodations do have to be made for him because things cannot hold his weight and he cannot hold things in certain ways.
Yes.
You know, it's not like he can have China. And that element is
Daniel,
always there. But
I'm not going to argue that.
But
I'm not
part of the
that.
Contrast with that is the fact that since the other three look normal and don't have the same issues as him, you've got a tension there.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I was rolling with this movie, man. I was ready to just give it the benefit of the doubt. I was going with it, man. And, you know, I'm just thinking to myself, as long as they stick with the themes, You know, stick with what makes the Fantastic Four work as the Fantastic Four. And I just, Daniel, I lived through this, man. I had someone buy one of my fantasy series, and I spent a year working with them just trying to figure out what they could change to make the story that they wanted. And I'm just thinking to myself as I'm working on this thing, why did you bother buying the story if you're just going to take it and change it into something else that it's not? It just didn't make any sense to me. You know, so why bother making a Fantastic Four movie other than to have the name Fantastic Four as the title if you're not going to go with what makes it work? Fantastic Four is about family. It is an optimistic thing. You know, it's about going out and just having a great adventure. And they tried. Yes, they tried in those first two Fantastic Four movies. They didn't necessarily succeed in the way a lot of people wanted them to. But I look at those two movies and I say they weren't the greatest. They aren't my favorites. But they were trying to do what makes a Fantastic Four the Fantastic Four. And if you don't like the Fantastic Four, then don't make a Fantastic Four movie. It just, every time one of these actors opens up their mouths about this movie, my interest in this movie goes down more and more and more. And I was with them on this. I was with them. And then they're like, no, you know, one of the great things about Fantastic Four is we can ignore things about Fantastic Four. And I'm just, oh, so frustrating. But then you have...
Who are you? Are you me?
Yeah. And so then you have...
Do you need like 11 things?
No, I just want a Fantastic Four movie that's about four people trying to get by and depending on each other.
Which that is what the core Fantastic Four story is and should be.
Yeah, and it's not sounding like it. However, they do have the writer, Simon Kinberg. He's out doing damage control about what these actors are saying. And he's saying, no. When they talked to me about doing Fantastic Four, I said, I only want to do Fantastic Four if it's going to be Fantastic Four. And we're not making... We didn't mean we're not doing anything based on the comics. We meant that we're not doing any specific story. Like, with Days of Future Past was a specific story. You know, and I just... I'm losing interest, and I was with this. I was the one saying, wait, let's wait and see. And now I'm just being told, well, yeah, Ben, wait and see that it's not going to be anything like you're interested in. So I'm going to try and I'm going to watch Chronicle. I'm going to give this director, you know, the benefit of the doubt. I'm trying. I really am.
Okay. So can I talk for a little bit? And now that you've ended your angry Daniel rant?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I feel that this likely goes back to what the vision is by director Josh Trank. Yep. I think he's kind of setting the vision. From these quotes, I get the sense that he's making his movie and he's putting a coat on top of it that says Fantastic Four.
But it means Chronicle 2. That's what I'm hearing people say, is that it sounds like Chronicle 2. I'm going to watch Chronicle. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to watch Chronicle. But
I think he's making his movie and the money is coming from Fantastic Four.
From the title.
I think that...
But the Fantastic Four is not like Godzilla.
I think my hope for this movie was pretty low anyway.
Mine's getting there.
I think that the Fantastic Four cannot have a lower impression on my mind as it currently does after I watched someone that I consider a very good comic book writer write himself into a Fantastic Four story.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby did that all the time.
Yeah, they're Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Okay, they're Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. They get some credit. If you're doing this and you're making yourself a big part of a story, it's weird.
It happens all the time.
I know why the Fantastic Four story comics are getting canceled, because they haven't been good. So, I mean, Fantastic Four is at a low. I understand that Fantastic Four really kicked things off for Marvel. As a comic, they're the opening of the Renaissance, you know, the Stan Lee Age of Heroes. But no, they're at a low right now.
The Fantastic Four core concept is a great concept, and it's one that I like we've talked about this before. I like what if stories. I like Elseworlds type stories. I like stories where it takes the core concept and uses that and doesn't rely on all the backstory and baggage and stuff like that. I've read some fantastic Fantastic Four stories, and I love a good Fantastic Four story. I'm not reading anything current. I'm not reading anything monthly, but things like Fantastic Four season one, that should be the movie. That should be the movie that we are going to see. But instead, it's a graphic novel that nobody cares about because it's season one and everyone thinks season one graphic novels are bad.
Because most of them are.
Most of them are not good. But this one is a fun story. And that's what Fantastic Four should be, a PG-rated fun movie where you can just go out and have fun, take the kids, and you're watching it and you're not embarrassed because it's not a kiddie movie. We're not talking about making something like Steel or Howard the Duck, okay? We're talking about just making a fun action movie, trying to do what they tried to do. And you know that the executives are sitting there saying, well, those first two movies tried to do it and they failed, so we can't try that again. No, they didn't fail because the concept didn't work. They failed because the screenwriter and the director didn't capture what was supposed to make it work. Just make it good. Make a fun Fantastic Four movie. And make it good. And make it interesting. And give us characters and actors who are fun and interesting. And don't try and force it into your, what you think, the postmodern, emotional, emo, we're going to make everyone suffer because people like watching superheroes suffer as they're trying to figure out if they're going to go ahead and be a superhero or not. No. Don't do that.
People are going to think you're me. They are.
No, because it's about Fantastic Four, so they'll know it's not you.
Okay. Because, yeah, I'm completely meh. I can't be emotional about it. It's not like it's Spider-Man.
I look at it as this is a comic. It's a comic book concept that has stood the test of time. It's a concept that can work if you get people who believe in it. And this is a problem I have with superhero comic books in general, is that when you have a society and a collection of writers who don't believe in heroes and who don't believe in heroism and who don't believe in good and evil, then you're not going to get good stories about heroes and about heroism and about good and evil. You have to have people who actually believe in these concepts, who actually think about, oh, this is a hero. A hero does this. Then you can tell a story about a hero. And instead we're getting deconstruction and depression. And I'm just, okay, I'm done. No more talk about Fantastic Four, please. Unless you want to. Don't let me, though.
I've said my meh comments.
Okay, so don't, if I start saying anything more, just stop me, okay?
Dude, I'm checking my fantasy baseball team because you're going way past. I'd like to thank all the listeners for tonight's episode of Welcome to Level 7's Fantastic Four Talk.
Okay.
Come to us next time when we finally talk about the Incredible Hulk.
I have held back all week since these things started coming out.
Dude, you're out of control.
I'm back. Let's talk about Sinister Six and Spider-Man.
Well, Sinister Six and Spider-Man now have release dates.
Well, did you hear the news, though? Sinister Six is not happening.
Well, yeah, because Latino Review.
That's right. They predicted it.
It only took about 2 days. Now, to be fair, when I posted it, I made the comment that sometimes I dream they might be true when I lay down at night.
And my comment was, Latino Review, if we say enough stuff, eventually something's going to be right.
Yeah. And this was one that wasn't.
Yeah.
Because Sinister Six is coming out November 11th, 2016.
And then we have a date for Spider-Man 4. Right?
Spider-Man
3.
Amazing
Spider-Man 3.
3.
Right.
So, but wait, let's back up to that. Originally, that date was held by Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Oh, so are they just pushing both these movies back?
I don't know if they had ever officially given Sinister Six a release date. But I believe
But they were saying that Sinister Six would be before Amazing Spider-Man 3.
Okay, okay.
I'm pretty sure that that's what they were saying.
Then they're pushing them both back. Because now Amazing Spider-Man 3 is not happening until 2018, with the rumor being Sony likes what Drew Goddard, who worked on Daredevil, what he was doing, but they want Mark Webb to fix Amazing Spider-Man if he stays. Because now, again, he's getting pushed back 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they probably saw the things that I noticed.
This is 4 years away now. Here's the thing about Sinister Six, though. The core concept of Sinister Six is a good concept. And if they're going to just ignore that...
Who are you?
So, I'm very, very curious, though.
You know what I want to see?
What?
Fine. If we're going to get I want to see a Superior Foes of Spider-Man movie.
Well, you're kind of getting that, aren't you?
No, because the Superior Foes of Spider-Man are not superior. They're the loser foes. And it's funny.
Oh, I haven't read that. I don't know anything about Superior Spider-Man. I know you really liked that, though, didn't you?
Yeah, it's quirky and it's funny, and there's like a head walking around on legs. It's weird. I love it.
But I'm curious. I'm very curious about the Sinister Six movie and how they think it's going to work and how they're going to make it work without Spider-Man. Because it reminds me of Gotham. You know, Gotham is a Batman story without Batman.
Just keep rubbing it in.
What? What?
Fine. Can we move on to TV shows that I have a chance of seeing?
Yeah. Let's talk about Daredevil has a Karen Page now. She is from True Blood.
Never seen it.
I haven't either. But she is playing Karen Page. Do you know anything about Karen Page?
I know that she's one of the top three loves of his life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know that there's some crazy, she's got a lot of drama.
The actress is Deborah Ann Woll. And yeah, Karen Page. So, I mean, they're basically filling out Daredevil's supporting cast. And I'm excited for Daredevil.
And we're also getting some comments about the feel for Daredevil, which is going to be we're going for a kind of very gritty 1970s New York feel for the show. But here's my question. Does that mean they're in the 1970s?
I have wondered that, because how fantastic would that be?
That you would definitely, I mean, again, with the companion shows with Luke Cage and Iron Fist, did those not have, let's face it, they were designed by the 70s.
They were. They have their roots in the blaxploitation films and in the kung fu films, both very popular in urban settings in the 70s. I mean, this is Bruce Lee in his heyday. This is, you know, Shaft and Foxy Brown and that kind of thing. And
you establish a superhero team-up team before the Avengers were even together.
I'm super curious now with this idea, though, because I would be very excited if this was all taking place in the 70s. Because we're... The chance to have a young Coulson in there somewhere would be just fun.
Just as long as they don't computerize Clark Gregg and try to make him look younger.
Well, you know. I think you're making him look, 10? I mean, there's going to...
That would be freaky if there was like a 10-year-old walking around with Clark Gregg's head. So let's not do that.
Yeah. But the idea excites me. The mood is what's most important. The setting... excites me, but the mood makes me want to just see this movie or these shows, rather. I'm excited for the drop.
All right. Got your scorecard out?
Scorecard.
All right. Here are some upcoming Marvel 616 changes that you need to know about.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's be honest. You already know about one of them.
These affect characters in the comics, but they're characters that are very prominent in film, and they're all changing.
They're all changing. Basically, we're getting Avengers now, which is going to give us a new Avengers comic book lineup, which honestly doesn't impact us much.
Okay, but hold on. Before you move on, Avengers now, you're not saying now we're getting Avengers.
No, it's called Avengers now, just like Marvel now.
Marvel now being a gimmick, basically, that Marvel was using to let people know we're kind of starting over with these characters in a way that if you are not familiar with them, pick it up now because you'll be able to just go right along with it. And if you were a fan and you are familiar with them, pick it up now. Now is the time to jump back on.
And by the way, everything we're about to tell you, we do not consider spoilery because Marvel has released this on their websites.
Not only on their websites, it's in major news outlets too.
Okay, so scorecard.
Scorecard.
Falcon is the new Captain America.
Check. Captain America is now Falcon. Sam Wilson.
Yep. And Steve Rogers is going to become Splinter because he's going to be an old dude.
Yes. So. He's going to be old, but he's also going to be helping train Sam Wilson to be Captain America, from what I understand.
Yeah. Now, I don't know how that works.
Check.
All right. Tony Stark. He's going all silver.
Check. He's changing his costume.
Going superior. Which, he's going to be the superior Iron Man. And what they're telling us is, no, he's not Doc Ock. He's not Dr. Octopus. But that attitude. Remember that attitude. So, basically, he's going to become a bigger jerk.
Yeah. He's going to be doing things his way because other ways aren't working.
All right. Check.
Check. All right. That's two of our three movie stars.
And number three, Thor will become a Disney princess.
Check. Thor, now a woman. Check.
Yeah. And by the way, this is not Thorita. This is not little Thor, Princess Thor. This is Thor.
No, it's not Thor.
No. Her name is Thor.
Yeah. Here's what's happening, Daniel. Daniel, what would you say your job is called? Like if I said, give me your job title.
It's really long and you don't really want to hear it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll do
supervisor of some stuff.
Okay, supervisor. All right. You're a supervisor of stuff. Okay, that'll work perfectly for what I'm saying here. Daniel is supervisor of stuff. Daniel, as supervisor of stuff, is asked to step down from being supervisor of stuff because he's not supervising the stuff very well. They're going to bring
I think I do a good enough job.
But they don't, okay? You're not worthy, which is what they're saying is Thor is not worthy of the hammer anymore. It needs to go to somewhere else. So for your job, someone else needs to be supervisor of stuff. So they bring in Janelle Carter-Williams. And Janelle Carter-Williams comes in, and they say, Janelle Carter-Williams, you are now supervisor of stuff. You are in charge of all this stuff that you're going to supervise. And we're going to call you Daniel. Because supervisor of stuff is named Daniel.
I have a different theory.
It just feels like that to me.
No, but I have a completely different theory.
Well, what's your completely
just
different theory?
Just based on some of the quotes where they make the comments that she is Thor. My guess is her name is Thor.
Okay. That's what I'm saying.
I don't think it's Janelle, and they changed her name to Thor.
So you're saying they hired a woman named Daniel to take your job.
Exactly.
That's a weird theory.
I have an actual theory on who it is.
I think it's Valkyrie.
No, it's not Valkyrie. Well, I got a better theory.
I would like it to be Valkyrie.
Because they've kind of said in their quotes, it's not a Valkyrie.
That's true. They're saying it's someone new, right?
Yeah, and it's not Lady Thor. It's not Sif. I think it's somebody that they've actually introduced in the comics or a version of it.
Okay.
So in the Thor God of Thunder comic book, which we've reviewed up at Welcome to Level 7, they're in the God Butcher arc and God Bomb, we meet gods from Asgard throughout time. And one of the groups of gods that we meet is granddaughters of Thor. And they kind of look like her. When we look at the pictures, sure, we look at the pictures and Thor, who the unworthy, looks like Bucky. But this Thor kind of looks like she could be one of the granddaughters.
Okay. Well,
And maybe they named her Thor out of honor to grandpa.
Can I just say, though, I wish they weren't naming her Thor.
But no, Thor's what sells the book.
Hear me out. Don't hear me out. I'm just going to go on another rant.
I'm just going to say
it'd be nice if this was a female character who was not just She-Hulk, who is not just Thor, but a girl, or Spider-Woman.
That's what they're saying. They're not trying to make her She-Hulk. They're not trying to make it Lady Thor. They're trying to make her the flagship.
No, but they're not. That's the thing. The branding is still that male branding, but applied to a female character instead of a new female character who stands on her own. And so, yeah, I can understand that it might suit the story and that we're not trying, they're not trying to make a statement with this. And they're not trying to say, oh, this is going to be the next big female character in Marvel. This is the next big step in this storyline for the Thor character and concept. But so, it just feels weird to me.
Here's my thoughts about all three of these combined. Because people keep asking me about the Disney princess. So here's my thoughts in general. This doesn't impact the MCU directly. We've seen these sorts of things happen before. Characters come and go. Marvel's hoping to sell more book. They're trying things out of the box. Do I believe that Steve Rogers is not going to be Captain America 10 years from now? No. Do I think Thor Odinson is not going to be Thor 10 years from now? No, I already know. I've seen that there is Thor the future king. And do I think that Iron Man's going to be a jerk forever? Yes, but not Silver.
These are
temporary. And if some of these concepts work, we might see them get borrowed in the MCU. You know, if you're going to make a case for is Falcon going to be who replaces Cap in the MCU movies because Chris Evans isn't going to do it forever, you know, maybe they try it out and see what the reception is here. I still think it's Bucky, but they can try it and see what the reception is.
Number two, I know, is if you were Sebastian Stan, which, by the way, we did a whole episode where we talked about Sebastian Stan and called him Sebastian Shaw.
Member of the Hellfire Club, and it was me doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And we were called out on it by Clark Gregg Reporter on Twitter, which was kind of fun. He's like, hey, dudes. And I'm like, oh, no. But yes, if I was Sebastian Stan, this news about Falcon taking on the mantle of Captain America, my heart would be sinking. I'd just be, oh, no, wait a minute. I thought I was going to be Captain America, maybe. Oh.
But it's a trial. Now, here's my bigger question.
Mm-hmm.
And let's use the Thor example. When does Thor change?
Back to regular Thor?
Mm-hmm. Does he change before Avengers 2, before Thor 3, or sometime unrelated in between the two of them?
Before Thor 3, for sure.
Cap, before Avengers 2, before Cap 3.
Before Cap 3, for sure.
So you do think that they will market Avengers 2 with these characters still not in their traditional look?
Yeah, they don't need to be for the Avengers. The Avengers, you're marketing a group, and you're marketing the group name. But with the individual movies, you're marketing that name.
Because, again, the thing is this is going to happen. And, you know, like the Thor thing, I know a lot of people are – there's been a lot of backlash on the Thor thing. You know, Jason Aaron's writing Thor. He wrote Thor God of Thunder. Thor God of Thunder is some of the best Thor books I've ever read. And Jason Aaron is doing a fantastic job right now with Original Sin. And so where a lot of people just look at this wrapping in the Snow story and are kind of getting upset, I'm looking at it and saying, you know, if Jason Aaron had some input on this, I've seen him do some interesting things, so I'm gonna give it a try. I will let him do it. Now, when I say give it a try, I'm gonna borrow it from the library.
And when you say you'll let him do it, you're basically saying I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt for my own reading because you can't stop him. But
I'm not gonna stop him. It's not like I'm gonna go to his house and shake my fist at him. So
that'd be fun, though.
And if it doesn't work, they're gonna just switch him back anyway.
Yeah. All right. We spent a lot of time on news. And
you still got some stuff to say.
We got one other thing, and that is we have new podcast. That's right. Daniel, me, and our buddy Matt Anderson, we have banded together. We have created a new podcast called The Comic Book Time Machine. And in that podcast, we go back in time, maybe a week, maybe a decade, maybe a month, maybe 30, 40, 50 years to read comic books. And so we're going back in time in our time machine, bringing back comic books to talk about them, read them, and have fun, because we think comics are fun. And honestly, this really comes down to, we want to have some of the conversations that we're having about comic books.
Apparently, the only rule is to have fun.
It is. The rule is we're going to talk about comic books, and we're going to have fun doing it. And so we're choosing comic books to talk about that we enjoy. And we just released our first episode, which is our favorite series of all time. We each came with 5 series that we really, really love. And then we also have solo episodes where we talk about things that we're exploring right now. So Daniel is reading Shaw Manhunter.
Yep, not that Green Martian.
No. The red and blue
costume, yeah.
Assassin. Yeah.
Bounty Hunter.
Bounty Hunter, okay. Sorry. And I'm reading Marvel Sci-Fi, and I'm having so much fun reading Jack Kirby 2001 and stuff like that. So yeah, that's at comicbooktimemachine.com. We're not going to say much more about it, but we are having a lot of fun doing that. That'll be – basically, you're going to be getting a double dose of Ben and Daniel if you subscribe to both of our podcasts.
Which is awesome.
Changes nothing about this podcast.
Hey, can I give you some breaking news?
Okay.
And that relates to news we already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier, we mentioned that the MCU grabbed the May 2018 date for a movie. Yeah, that was originally occupied by Amazing Spider-Man 4.
By the way, the whole big thing, too, with the dates are Captain America 3, they're not blinking. They're not going anywhere.
They're not blinking. And do we have a sponsor?
We do. We have one last bit, and that is we need to say thank you once again to Agent Michael. Thank you so much, because you are helping this podcast to get better. We're going to be buying some new equipment that we're able to afford now. And by the time season 2 starts in September, we will have a couple of new setups that will be they'll make things easier for us as far as podcasting goes in general, but that will hopefully also make some of the recording quality and that kind of thing better. I don't know if you'll notice how much better. I don't notice those kind of things when I listen to other people's podcasts, unless it's really outrageous. But anyway, we are so thankful to you, Agent Michael. He was a person who gave at the wah level. When you go to welcomelevel7.com and click on support, it takes you to a place where you can give. You can basically choose between $5 and $50. The wah level is the $50 level. You get, as a thank you, a Howard the Duck commentary track that Daniel and I recorded. You're not buying the commentary track. That's us saying thank you. And, so we're just going to thank you once again, Agent Michael. This is his fourth shout-out, maybe fifth. We lost track. And so we always want to make sure that we overdo the correction instead of underdoing it. So, Agent Michael, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. So that's that. Should we start talking about what we actually are intending to report about?
The field report?
Yeah. Now that we've spent a lot of time just going crazy about, me going crazy, not you.
Which is going to be shocking.
Wait,
most people are going to be shocked by that.
One last thing, Daniel. I saw the Gotham pilot.
No,
I did.
About that. No.
Yeah.
No.
So I got to see it.
No.
I saw it today.
I'm taking off my headphones.
Daniel, it was fun.
Message me when you're done.
No, Daniel, put your headphones.
Nope.
Put your headphones back on. Leave them on. Daniel, it's okay. It's okay, Daniel. So I saw the Gotham pilot, and I'm not going to say too much. I don't want to spoil anything, but I felt like it just felt right. It was a very strong pilot, and I'm very excited to see where the Gotham TV series goes. If I wasn't already podcasting about Welcome to Level 7, about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. rather, Gotham would be something I'd consider podcasting about. But we do have some friends who are podcasting about it, and they've already been doing a fantastic job over at the – Daniel, what's it called? Daniel?
TV podcast.
Gotham TV podcast.
Yep, Gotham TV podcast. I always put TV in there, city in there, but it's Gotham TV podcast.
Yeah, Gotham TV. And so they're doing a great job, so I'm not worried about it, because we've got a good podcast that's going on about that I can listen to. And yeah, the pilot was fun. Some of these characters that you know about, they're good. The portrayal of Ed is good. The portrayal of Oswald, great, very interesting. Jim Gordon, good. It was a strong pilot, and I'm gonna stop there and just say, one last thing. They might have referenced Solomon Grundy. It was a quick in passing thing where he's saying, meet me at 4th and Grundy. And I'm like, what? Wait. And then I'm thinking to myself, ooh, they could actually bring that in as like a legacy family in the city that actually had a street named after themselves. And now it's, you know, Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday. But didn't Solomon Grundy appear in Arrow?
He did.
Okay, so maybe it's just as simple as we're referencing the name since we can't use the character.
Well, but when we say Solomon Grundy, it was kind of like he was referenced, but they never like 100% said that was Solomon Grundy, okay. And it was a different origin then, the DC Solomon Grundy.
And so then when Flash showed up and started running around the city and solving all the crimes, and Arrow showed up and he started shooting all the people with arrows, and Constantine came and said, oh, bollocks. And then it was just all sorts of craziness. I'm lying about all that. But do you realize, Daniel, we're going to have superhero comic book based TV shows on every weeknight during the next season. We're only going to podcast about one.
And well, I'm not
two,
gonna
if
watch
you include Agent Carter. But
and I'm not going to watch them all.
Okay, I'm ready to talk about our topic. And I was just very excited to go and see that. That was very fun.
Yeah, I've been taunted all day about it.
It was at our local comic shop, buymetoys.com, which actually has a website presence as well. If you go to buymetoys.com, you can buy statues and comic books and stuff like that. And they had a special showing through our Fox channel. And they showed it 3 times. I was there for the first showing. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. So thanks, buymetoys.com.
Didn't invite Daniel.
You can still thank them.
Thank you, buymetoys.com, for breaking my heart.
Yes, thank you for breaking Daniel's heart. I got there and I was talking to Casey, the owner. I said, oh, Casey, do you think you could let me use your internet for a moment? Because I want to gloat to my friend. And gloat I did indeed. So let's move on to our field report.
Mission report.
Ben?
Hey, Daniel.
You're a young man. You're watching TV.
Yeah.
You hear the Lonely Man theme that you don't know what it's called because you're too young.
Uh-huh.
Are you in front of that TV?
I am in front of that TV.
Because we're here today to talk about a little television adventure in the Marvel Universe. A period in time. We're talking about Bill Bixby and the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah. I'm in front of that TV and I'm feeling feelings I don't understand. Because I'm only, 8 or 9. And I'm feeling melancholy. I'm feeling like this is, I just watched this action show with a great big strong guy and he never hurts children. And, he'll stand in front of a child and just kind of, and so I don't have anything to be afraid of, but I'm looking at this and it's exciting and it's fun, but I'm feeling sad at the end.
Like your main character's trapped in a loop they can't escape from.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's all alone and this piano plays. And to this day, there is a certain group of people, certain generation, a certain group in our generation, I should say, who when they hear that music, I won't say they automatically get choked up, but I do feel this kind of nostalgia and melancholy when I hear those piano chords, even when they're not part of the TV show. Maybe even especially when they're not a part of the TV show.
So what we're here to talk about today is The Incredible Hulk, which appeared from 1978 to 1982 on CBS for 82 episodes.
Yeah.
And the basic plot, the basic story behind The Incredible Hulk.
And it is basic.
Is David Banner, not Bruce Banner, but David Banner was a scientist who was studying the ability of some people to be able to have great strength at moments of crisis. He's studying and he experimented on himself and he wound up overdosing himself on gamma radiation, which led to him being able to transform himself into the Incredible Hulk when he was angry. And he was involved in a fire at the lab in which he worked. And it was believed that the creature killed Dr. Banner and his associate. And a reporter named Jack McGee was trying to track down the creature that had killed the late David Banner. Then in the episodes afterwards, basically every episode has David Banner coming to a town, usually in California. California's a pretty small place, a big place. Meeting someone who somehow needed help. At some point, he would turn into the Hulk, who would then be somewhat helpful to the story. And then he'd leave town after he'd helped people. And then the secondary part of this story is he's trying to cure himself wherever he goes. And that cure is always out of reach.
Right.
And again, it's a really basic plot. It's not Monster of the Week because the monster is always the Hulk. It's a Villain of the Week. It's every episode, you know, you're resolving in 44 minutes, except for a lot of two-parters, what the major problem is. But it's the same basic formula. Every episode, he comes to town. He meets some nice people. They have a problem. He winds up getting involved. Their problem resolves.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's – because of that simplicity, that really helped, I think, with the ratings and stuff like that. I mean, this was a very popular show, especially in its heyday, the first, second, third seasons, and maybe even the fourth. But I think it was waning in the fourth season. But anyway, because it's simple, you could watch a couple episodes in the first season, and then maybe you had softball practice every week, you know, for a year, and missed a whole year of the show. You can come back. You don't need to know what happened. This isn't Lost. This isn't Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. even.
And I think one of the ironic things about that is like you, for example, you've got some very detailed information about The Incredible Hulk because you've watched it more recently than I did until I got ready for this. With me, I have not watched an episode of The Incredible Hulk in 15 years. But I also could tell you that I enjoyed it. I could tell you I enjoyed Bixby and Ferrigno. And I could also tell you what the basic story was of every episode because it's always the same.
Yeah. The only differences are setting, but even then, they're filming in Los Angeles, so the setting is not going to change too much. He's basically walking America. And, you know, you're like you said, he's going to end up somewhere new, and maybe he's going to help someone. Someone might help him. He might fall in love. I mean, there's some details that are going to be different in every episode. But, yeah, basically, I mean, this is The Fugitive. You know, the Fugitive was – dude is on the run for a crime he didn't commit. He's trying to find the one-armed man. But along the way, he's being chased by, you know, law. And the law is after him. And it's the same guy, you know. And so with the Hulk, he's being chased by a reporter. And he's not in every episode. But he is because he's in the beginning credits.
Yeah.
But
and his role differs. I mean, in some episodes, Jack McGee is chasing and pursuing and is there as almost kind of a shadow that any moment he could find David and then he'll know David is alive. And then in some episodes, he's kind of like everything's happened. And then Jack McGee comes into town and is kind of in the wake of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I enjoy the series, though. The one thing is you don't want to binge watch The Incredible Hulk because of what we're saying here.
Because of the sameness.
It's the sameness, yeah.
And I will say I spent two weekends where I would binge watch for a while and then I did have to stop. Not because I wasn't enjoying it. But even – I will say this. Even at one point, especially with some of the one-parters, I was able to get my oldest to watch. And I was asked at one point, you haven't been watching The Incredible Hulk without me, have you?
Nice.
And again, this is a show from 78. And that's a child who's used to fast pace, boom, boom, boom. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., constant tension, constant action. This show is not constantly tense. There's a lot of talky, talky, talky.
Yes. And what I like about it, though, is because of the time period, they did have to rely on emotion and they had to rely on practical effects. This is based on two actors, Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. And without those two guys in those roles, I really can't see this working the way it did.
No, they really are a matched pair. You have to have both of them. And basically, Bill Bixby was a veteran television actor who had done drama. He had done sitcom. You know, he'd been on things like My Favorite Martian. He had been on things like, I believe it's called The Magician. He had been on some things of note and was considered a very serious television actor.
Right.
Lou Ferrigno was an up-and-coming bodybuilder, and this was really his first television – his first acting. And you could almost look at that and say, you know, well, clearly that means Bixby is really carrying all this. It's not. It's them together, and we even kind of talked Facebook messaging back and forth. So there's an episode where it is that it doesn't work, the episode and the concept that they're trying to pull off, unless they had been able to mesh this character together and understand that they're both two sides of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And they Bill Bixby, he has said, you know, they were a team. Lou Ferrigno has said they were a team. They worked together. They were friends. I don't know if – I mean, I'm sure that there was some sort of behind-the-scenes drama every once in a while because you know what? That's what happens in life. But, yeah, they – the team makes it work. Definitely makes it work. And I just want to – you know, Lou Ferrigno, for the role he was given, he brings a lot to it. I was talking about the children that, you know, whenever he'd come in contact with children, he'd just be kind of, you know, but he was able to give that kind of naive, simplistic,
meek
and
afraid,
curious, confused. He did these well, and Lou Ferrigno, he makes the Hulk the Hulk. If it had been someone like Arnold Schwarzenegger, who was also up and coming bodybuilder at the same time as Lou Ferrigno, and they're both featured in that documentary. I can't remember what the documentary was, but Lou Ferrigno, I mean, he's an enormous guy compared to he's taller, I think, than Lou Ferrigno, than Arnold Schwarzenegger. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, I don't think it would have worked. You know, it just because of who, I mean, it's just a different guy.
Well, and really, maybe it's the fact that Lou hadn't acted where he was able to, he hadn't been typecasted yet, but he was able, you know, he was fresh. And maybe even some of that inexperience with acting is what allowed him to really bring across simplicity. Because when he's the Hulk, it's easy for you to think he's just putting on green paint and flexing his muscles.
Yeah.
But he's not. I mean, even in that pilot episode where he meets this little girl out on the lake, he conveys a situation where he's curious and he's frightful and he's, you know, he's reacting to everything around him. He gets shot. You know, there's some complex emotions going on when he's the Hulk. It's not just big green muscles flexing, which is what it's easy to just characterize it as.
Yeah. And that scene you're referencing, it's very much out of the book of Frankenstein, you know, where there's the little girl picking flowers or whatever. And, you know, the beast is trying to figure out beauty, you know, whatever. But, and they definitely pull on the Frankenstein monster, strings, you know, with this idea with what Lou Ferrigno is playing. And but then their other big thing obviously is Jekyll and Hyde that they're playing on, and this is you know, the angry side, the out of control animal side of Bill Bixby. And that's the other side of things, is Bill Bixby playing this guy who has that under the surface tension, and it's boiling, and you can see it start to boil, and he's trying to fight it. And that's the thing, is you see the fight.
And you know why he's angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do. You know why he's angry. And you understand that he is in this very vicious circle, and he does know that he lacks control. So, do you mind if I just go ahead and just start launching into something? Because we're hitting on some of it already.
I don't know what you're talking about, but I don't mind at all.
So as I sat down and watched this, Ben, mm-hmm. I came up with three, and now I have four lessons for for MCU TV.
Okay.
And I think this will especially help with Netflix because we've already got our show, Agents, out the door. Though one of them I kind of want to point my finger at Agents on. And we've already kind of talked about some of these lessons already. And so I want to hone in on them a little bit more.
Okay.
Let's hear it. So lesson number one, MCU it. Again, this show was developed with Marvel, The Incredible Hulk. We know Stan Lee was involved with this and getting it on the ground, off the ground. But that being said, in many ways, this could not be more unlike the comic books.
Yes.
Of that time period. This is not Bruce Banner. This is David Bruce Banner.
Yes.
He is a very intelligent doctor. But he didn't have the gamma bomb explosion that we see as the origin in the comic books. We don't have the Rick Jones piece. This is a very, you can almost argue, personal origin because it's a man whose wife died in a car accident. He wasn't able to help because he didn't have the strength to free her. So he becomes obsessed with, you know, how do some people tap into this strength that they don't believe they have? And I couldn't. And that's really the origin, the MCU, and then the Hulk too. The Hulk is MCU'd in the sense that you've even talked about it, the Frankenstein monster. You know, this oftentimes when I think of Hulk comic books from the 70s and 80s, the Hulk is kind of out of control. Even now, with the current versions, with the Indestructible Hulk, they talk about Banner builds, Hulk breaks. You know, this Hulk is not out of control. This Hulk is scared. This Hulk is inexperienced, but even though at times David Banner feels as if the Hulk is a monster, this Hulk is not a monster. This Hulk is a child. It's a toddler. And it works because instead of saying we're stuck with a comic book and we're going to follow everything that's happened in the comic book, basically decades before we had the MCU, they MCU'd it. And made it work for the format they put it into.
Yeah. Now, they gave it a format of its time, though. They didn't have DVDs and VHS and Blu-ray and Netflix and everything like that. And so they had to make it accessible. And that's the interesting thing, though, is because I was familiar with The Incredible Hulk because of the TV show. And so when I checked out some Incredible Hulk comic books from the library when I was in, you know, early junior high or late elementary school, I was confused.
And you know what? I had the same experience.
Because he's talking.
He's angry and he's smashing and he's completely thoughtless.
Well, that didn't confuse me as much as the talking part. And I think it was newspaper strips. And I just remember, Hulk just want to be left alone. And I'm just like, that's not – when did the Incredible Hulk learn to talk? It just didn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like the television show ruined me for Hulk comic books.
It almost ruined me.
Because I've always wanted Bruce Banner to be Bill Bixby, and I've expected the Hulk to be Lou Ferrigno in the fact of being these characters versus who they were in the pages of the comic book.
Can I say something?
No, go ahead. It's your show too.
Well, here's the thing. When I say this, I'm afraid because it happened with Star Wars and the Star Wars. That was my idea, Daniel, to do the Star Wars where it's take George Lucas's original thing. That was my idea. I didn't tell anyone, so no one stole it from me.
Yeah, they wouldn't have paid you for it anyway.
Well, no. I was trying to get my friend, who was an artist who was working with Dark Horse at the time, to get me positioned to where I could pitch it to them. And this was a couple years before they actually did it. And it never happened. I never told anyone about it. I'm not saying anyone stole it from me. I'm just saying it was something I had thought of and thought it was a great idea. And apparently it was a great idea because I just bought the trade paperback today of it.
And I read all the single issues.
But Daniel, we've got Batman 66 out there right now, the comic book.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Oh, and I would totally, Marvel Comics, I loved working for you the first time. I would love to work for you again. I would love to write an Incredible Hulk comic book for you that is a continuation of the TV series.
You could call it Bixby Hulk or Hulk 78.
Hulk 78 or something. Yeah, I think, I don't know. But wouldn't that be awesome? Wouldn't that be just fun?
It would. But do you think that the Norton Hulk movie takes away from the possibilities of that happening? Because
nope.
In many ways, he was trying to do his homage to this. And it was a nice homage. And it feeds to people of our generation, those tips of the hat to the Incredible Hulk. Again, there was the Courtship of Eddie's Father's on one of the TVs.
It is in Spanish, but yeah. So that's how Bill Bixby got his Marvel Cinematic Universe cameo, which is – it was a nice homage. I don't think it ruined it at all, because this would be – you know, I mean, they're doing it with the Bionic Man. They're doing it with Batman 66. I know someone at Marvel is trying to get this to happen, and I know that someone's trying to get it to happen.
And if they're not, they should be.
Yeah. And so I would love to be that guy, but I know I'm not going to be. But anyway, I think that'll make a fun comic book series. So anyway.
Can I give you number two?
Give me number two.
Number two, we've also somewhat talked about too. Character drives the action.
Totally.
This show is not obsessed with saying every 12 minutes we're going to have a big giant action scene. And if there is an action scene, it's somewhat been led there by the characters, you know, the Bad Hat, the White Hat, Bruce's reaction, even the character of the Hulk, as we've talked about. This is a very, very character-driven program. That may be partially due to the fact that it's 70s and special effects are expensive. It could be the fact that, again, Bill Bixby, very experienced, very good actor, so why not use him?
But right. This,
you know, and we talk in some of our rundowns of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'll go talkie, talkie, talkie. Sometimes talkie, talkie, talkie is bad, and I don't always mean it to be bad. It means I don't want to summarize all the talking that happened. These episodes, there's, you know, if it's 48 minutes, there easily is 30 minutes talkie, talkie, talkie. And sometimes that 30 minutes of talkie, talkie, talkie flies.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing to think about here is part of his character is avoiding conflict. He does not want to turn into the Hulk. Even if there's bad guys doing bad things, turning into the Hulk is not his first choice. He'll do it. You know, he'll let himself become the Hulk if, you know, a bad guy throws him off a bridge or something and he needs to help the girl who's up on the bridge still. And they always throw him somewhere or drop him somewhere or move somewhere so they can't see the transformation and they can't put two and two together, or they aren't going to be able, you know, if they can put two and two together, they're not going to tell anyone. But yeah, it is definitely character driven, and it had to be. But that, on the flip side of that, it had to be because that's good storytelling too.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I mean, you had three recurring actors, two recurring characters on the show. There were a couple characters who showed up for two episodes, and I'm not talking about two-parters, but there was, you know, there's one or two characters where they'll be in one episode and then, you know, half a season later, they'll be in another one revisited. Well, but
what cracks me up is, because again, supporting actors, we've seen this. If you go to IMDb, you'll see people come back onto the show as different characters. And I had to laugh because Death in the Family, the main female guest star, is also in Prometheus. And in both episodes, she has different disabilities. Because you've seen Prometheus, and Prometheus, she's blind. In Death in the Family, she's lame.
Yeah. But they, yeah, I just, it's, it has to work with the characters, because otherwise you don't want to come back. And so you, if you don't care about the characters, you're not going to watch it. So, and that's something we should learn. I mean, not just for MCU, on TV, but just in general, for general storytelling.
And again, it's not just Bixby. The episode, My Favorite Magician, there's a scene where the Hulk is hulked out and he has an interaction with an older couple on the street. And it's, you know, no bashing, no, but it's amusing because there's misunderstandings going on in the mm-hmm. scene. But again, the Hulk has character moments.
He does. Now, granted, his character development is not as sophisticated because he's the rage part. You know, he's the child. I mean, that's the thing. It's Lou Ferrigno plays Hulk in a lot of ways like a child. It's the 3-year-old temper tantrum. But then the confusion. And, you know, my son, who's 3, he knows how to, you know, treat a baby. He's not going to be rough with a baby. He instantly knows to get calmer and to, you know, to be gentle. Not every 3-year-old is like that. And my other kids weren't necessarily like that sometimes. But I see Lou Ferrigno playing it that way. And so when there's a child, it's like it's a kindred spirit for Lou, for the Hulk. And it's there's a couple of the episodes. I did a post called The Incredible Hulk, a best and worst episode guide. It's at welcometolevel7.com/Hulk episodes. And it'll be published by the time this episode comes out. But in a couple of those episodes that I recommend as the best, there are moments with children. And it's just really interesting. The one I'm thinking of from King of the Beach is the funnest one for me, or one of them, where there's a kid just on the beach making a sandcastle and Hulk comes by and he wants to help make a sandcastle and he can't. And she's, "You ruined it. Get out of here. Go on. Go on now. Get out of here. Go on." And Hulk's just kind of, and eventually he goes on.
And I want to plug that posting because even though at the time we're recording, it's not published yet, I have actually previewed it.
I wondered.
Because it's available to me, and I actually used it to help me kind of pick out some of my Hulk episodes. And that's a very good post when you're going to go pick out Hulk episodes, Incredible Hulk episodes. I know that when we talked about the pilot, that I believe it was Brian made the comment that he had a hard time getting past the montage at the beginning because he didn't know who they were. And the thing is at that point, nobody knew who they were because it's kind of a cold open where you come into this montage where in like 6-7 minutes, you get all this information about David Banner and his wife. And his wife is going to be gone.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. It's tough because the inciting incident is the death of his wife. You need to care about him and his wife, but the story can't start until his wife dies because that's his whole motivation for going and researching this stuff.
So even if you don't watch the pilot, I would, because every episode is going to tell you what happened in the pilot anyway with the narrator. You know, look at that list. Pick at least a one episode arc and just watch one based on, you know, what you see in those descriptions, if it's something that catches your interest.
Well, here's the thing, though. Some of these other episodes that I recommended, they actually do lots of flashbacks. And it's a thing. It's a thing for the time. It's a thing for the budget. So Married, season 2, episode 1, flashes back to the origin story and retells you everything about his marriage and stuff like that. And,
but think about Married. Think about Married. This is an action television show.
Mm-hmm.
Could you ever imagine anyone other than the special effects department on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. getting an Emmy?
For acting, I can imagine. Yeah, maybe.
Really?
Yeah. Well, definitely Clark Gregg, I think, has some moments.
Well, the thing is you and I think that he needs one. But I think a lot of people discount it because of what it is. It's a comic book movie, mm-hmm. a television show. Why would you ever do that? You know, I think people would discount it. But when you looked at Married, there's a Best Supporting Actress winner out of that episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she earns it on character.
Yeah. And
by the way, Clark Gregg, I seriously do believe that, and I'm not just making this, you know, I'm a Clark Gregg guy. I seriously believe that the portrayal of Phil Coulson is Emmy worthy because there's a lot of depth that's going on in there. I know Clark listens. So,
well, what's your next lesson?
Special effects can be good, but small.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give you some examples. I'm going to give you a really simple example, and then I'm going to get into some more complex ones. When I was watching Prometheus, and I'm going to talk about Prometheus again. There is a special effects shot that is literally nothing more than a tail rotor of a helicopter and a styrofoam rock being thrown into it. And it works.
Mostly.
It doesn't need to be more than that. It tells the reviewer what is occurring. It's not complex. It's on and off the screen in seconds, and it advances the point of the story that needs to be advanced. Okay? That's a very simple one.
Yes, it is.
Now, here's a complex one that might give you an even more complex one. The transformation, that's pretty much all practical effects. Happens every episode, mm-hmm. sometimes more than once. The transformation holds up. It's not that, you know, you're thinking to yourself, oh, it's 1978. It's going to be horrible effects. It's really not.
No, the simplicity works.
Exactly. Now I'm going to give you an even – I'm going to take it a step further. Again, going to Prometheus. In Prometheus, he's stuck in mid-form.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they handle this? The middle version of the Hulk is played by both actors simultaneously. So if he's talking, it's Bill Bixby in makeup that is mid-transformation. But if you want to show that he's got muscles – you do and those are all like close shots. It's the face. It's really all you really see in most of those is the face. But if you need to see him walking or if you need to see him standing and that he has abs, they use Lou in the exact same makeup. And it gets to the point where you forget in some of these sequences, it's two different men because the makeup is matched very well. They chose a makeup that, in my mind, kind of molds their faces together anyway because they want to go from one face to another, which helped the transformation itself. But again, it's very simple. It's about camera angles and makeup, and it works.
Yeah, I think they also had another actor doing some of those long shots, I think. So he wasn't quite as big as Lou, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to say this, though, Daniel, because you bring up special effects, man. I mean, did you watch Death in the Family?
Are you going to talk about the bear?
The bear. Let's talk about the bear for a moment. This is a moment in television history that I am so glad that it exists.
Well, you didn't tell me to watch it, but I watched it anyway.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to remember what I – did I recommend Death in the Family? No, oh. I did not recommend Death in the Family.
It was one of my rogue ones.
Okay. Yeah, Death in the Family – is a two-parter. It was actually, I think, the second pilot that they made.
Yep, it's the second. It's the third and fourth episode.
Yeah, and it's not great. It's not great. But he fights a bear, and oh my goodness, this scene, it's just wonderful.
And famous.
It is. It is. And they repeated it. It's so good that they repeated it in Lou Ferrigno's Hercules movie where he fights a bear again. And this bear he throws into outer space. But you know, there's just something about Lou Ferrigno fighting a bear. It just makes me joyful. It just makes me feel good. And then there's him fighting a gorilla. Daniel, did you watch him fight the gorilla?
I didn't watch him fight the gorilla.
You didn't watch him fight the gorilla? That got special mention in my post. It was let's see, the episode is The Beast Within. And yeah, I simply wrote Banner in a Zoo means Hulk versus a man in a gorilla suit. It is so bad. It is the highlight of the episode because it is so bad. And it's a bad gorilla suit. It is not a good gorilla suit. And the stuntman in the gorilla suit, he hardly even tries to walk like a gorilla, talk like a gorilla. I mean, he just, they were doing Planet of the Apes in 2001 in 1968. 10 years earlier. And this is the gorilla suit they came up with. This is the gorilla suit that a man at my church in the middle of Michigan, you know, he was able to rent and wear to a party, you know, for all the children. I mean, this is, it was bad. It was bad. But the thing is, for the most part, they knew their limitations. And I think limitations in television oftentimes results in better television.
I agree. And again, if I'm going to point a finger on Tuesday nights, it's here. You know, let's be smart about our special effects.
Yep. Yep. Because there were some special effects shots that just stuck out to us. Because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fits into a universe that includes the Avengers. And when I say the Avengers, I don't mean the team. I mean the movie. And Winter Soldier. Now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. benefited from Winter Soldier because they could show all of those things on the screen that were happening during the Hydra War. And it was movie level. It was cinema level. But
yeah, but let's quit competing. No. We're not big screen TV.
Don't compete.
I mean, big. We're not the movies.
You don't need to compete.
We're not Guardians of the Galaxy. So, because I need to say Guardians in there.
And by the way, though, there were good special effects that were used in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It was just there were a few where they ran out of time or ran out of money.
And they stood out so badly.
Yeah. So number four.
And this is my final. Have fun. And so this is what I mean. My favorite magician, the title is a spoof on My Favorite Martian.
And
it guest stars Ray Walston, who was Bixby's guest star on My Favorite Martian.
Yep.
And you get the sense, you know, and it's about magic, which is something that Bill Bixby was interested in. And you can tell that it was enjoyable for them. You know, they were having a reunion. And as a television viewer at that time, who folks remembered My Favorite Martian would have been interested in seeing Walston and Bixby together.
Yeah.
Another example that is fun.
Wait, before you get to that, he was also in a show called The Magician.
Yeah, exactly, where he did his own magic.
Yeah.
Another example of have fun is, you know, here you are. You're in a few seasons and you do King of the Beach and you need you decide to do it about bodybuilders. You know what? Let's let Lou play somebody who's not the Hulk.
Yeah.
And that episode, as you hear Bill Bixby introduce the episode and say, this is Lou Ferrigno's first speaking role. And you see Lou on the screen. It brought me to a little bit of a tear because there it is. It's his. He had worked in television for years and now he finally gets to play someone who looks like him and actually gets to speak. And along with looking like him and having a story similar to his, he also is a very proud man on television demonstrating someone who is functioning in society with a disability because they reference the hearing aids.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the screenwriter who wrote that episode wrote in some things that reflected his actual story and his, I hate using the word, but his journey or whatever.
But again,
these are things. It was a personal story, even though it wasn't purely biographical. It was a personal story. He got to do stuff that he didn't have to wear the green makeup for whole scenes, you know. And the other thing is, when he and Bill Bixby were on screen together, this is where you see the friendship, the off screen friendship definitely showed up on the screen. As they're working together at, you know, whatever Bill Bixby's job that week, you know, in a diner is, well, they're working together, they're talking together, they're joking together, they're patting each other on the shoulder, and you know, you can feel
and they're having a good time.
Yes.
And you know, going back to Bixby again, you know, doing some research, I would love to get a hold of Ferrigno's autobiography, which is hugely expensive.
It is.
Because the thing is when you see some of the extras from that, you really do get the sense that the two of them were partners. And even when the show's canceled, you know, it talks about how Lou and Bill worked to try to get the show back on. And, you know, and did Bill Bixby really need to do Incredible Hulk movies? You know, but he did them.
He really wanted them, though. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. We'll talk about those in a future episode. But
yeah, later.
But he really wanted that because that was.
And he wanted to work with Lou.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and Lou has nothing but good things to say about Bill. And Bill has, from what I have read, nothing but good things to say about Lou.
Here's the sense I get from the things that I've read about Bixby. And so this really isn't one of my points, but, you know, I get the sense that Bill Bixby, who later became a director, I think he really was a giving actor, and I think he was supportive. And I get the sense that, you know, when you even look at the courtship of Eddie's father, because the child actor that he worked with on that show had a relationship with him for his entire lifetime until he passed away. You get the sense that he made relationships. He helped other actors. He gave. He helped. And that probably is one of the reasons why he was able to move on to directing, is because of the fact that he understood how to work instead of just being, you know, the superstar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and say a few of the episodes that I recommend and a few of the episodes that I don't recommend, but I do secretly recommend them.
Don't give them all. Just I'm do not two going two. To. Let's make people. Let's
I'm,
make
I'm
people
just
going to
do a couple. I'm just going to do a couple. Okay. But definitely the pilot, because that sets up the series. And Prometheus is possibly the best of the entire series. That was the one with the most budget. And yeah. And then those two I definitely recommend. Along with that, well, I'll also say The Psychic. I'll throw in The Psychic. And that one, the problem is with some of these that I recommend, they have flashbacks to the pilot. So if you're watching them in close together, and The Psychic does that same thing. But the cool thing was, this was did you watch The Psychic, Daniel?
Nope.
Oh, OK. Well, we were talking about on-screen chemistry. The person who plays The Psychic was named Brenda Bennett and was married to Bixby at the time that they did that episode. So it was a good episode, and they definitely had a chemistry when they're on screen together. So there's others. I recommend a bunch of the two-parters, and I recommend, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I recommend 7, but some of those are two-parters. I only had two that I gave mention as the worst. There was a couple others, but Never Give a Trucker an Even Break is a terrible episode, but it's interesting because they use footage from Steven Spielberg's TV movie Duel. And because it's all about truckers and stuff. And I have a thing for 70s trucker movies. I don't know why. And on our podcast, Comic Book Time Machine, eventually I'm going to be reading US One, and I'm so excited about that. The other one is The Phenom. The worst episode. I'm going to just, I say it's the worst episode. This first episode of season 5. Season 5 is not very good. It's so bad. It's so bad. And the highlight of how bad it is when a baseball team, because it's a baseball episode, a baseball team, they're coming and they're confronting the Hulk, and they don't want to go close, so they throw a bat at him. And the Hulk is holding the bat, and then they throw a baseball at him. And he just, you know, happens to swing the bat just the right way. He hits the ball. You know, it's that it goes out of the park. You know, it's just like, oh, my goodness, why did they do this? The episode is really, really, really bad. It is possibly the kind of thing you could potentially watch with friends and make it better, because you're watching it and just there's so many questions and so many. Oh, it's just terrible. And then there are a couple of special mentions. We talked about King of the Beach, which is great because you get to see Lou Ferrigno being Lou Ferrigno. They don't dub him like they do in Hercules. He doesn't have to wear the makeup for most of the episode. It's not a great episode, but a lot of the scenes where it's Lou and Bill together are very good. The climax, there's some weirdness to the climax of that episode. And there is one moment where, you know, Hulk carries someone and hands this person off, and you can see the green makeup on her clothes that's rubbed off from his belly. But and then there's the Beast Within with the fight with the gorilla suit. And then the special one to me is the Anti-Wook Horror. And it's just because there's a mystery monster, and I, when I was a kid, watched it and I thought, oh, there's gonna be a monster and the Hulk gets to fight the monster. Not in that episode. There is an episode where Hulk does fight a monster. But very, most of the time it's very natural opponents that they're going after. And
the monster within.
Yeah.
So Ben, it seems to me that we both enjoyed this show as kids.
Yes, we did.
And we both overall think it held up.
Yes, there were definitely some parts that don't hold up. And I, like I said, do not recommend binge watching.
But wouldn't you say that on Tuesday nights, if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. had the same sort of legacy as The Incredible Hulk, that they probably did a good job?
Yeah. I don't know if anything can have that kind of legacy anymore, but yeah.
All right.
So that's our discussion about The Incredible Hulk. We will be talking about we'll be talking about some more MCU on the small screen. In an upcoming episode, we'll be talking about the Captain America TV movies. There were two of them, Captain America and Captain America 2, Death Too Soon. And then in an episode after that, we'll be talking about Daredevil and Thor.
With the Hulk.
With the Hulk, yeah. And I'm excited to watch those movies because I haven't seen them since they aired on TV. I might have recorded them and watched them a couple times.
No, I'm in the same
but
boat.
It's been at least since, I mean.
That's the thing that people forget, you know.
The 90s. Things, it's been the 90s. You know,
it wasn't like we could watch it whenever we wanted to.
Nope.
And at that time, you did. You had to set up the VCR, and you either had to be there, or you had to figure out, you got program the VCR, and if you were off, you know, you were off, and you never got it again. So,
yeah. So anyway, we will be talking about some of the other things, but this was our opening episode about the MCU on the small screen, and I enjoyed going back and revisiting the Incredible Hulk TV series.
I had a good time.
It was fun. So that said, I think it's time for us to go.
All right.
All right. So I do want to say once again, once again, as we take our backpacks and walk down the street, put our thumb out.
All our belongings in the entire world in it.
Oh, man. There was an episode I just watched a few days ago where a mugger dumped out his entire bag in an alley full of garbage. And I'm just like, oh, that's all his clean clothes in the garbage right now. Not clean anymore. Terrible episode though, unfortunately. But so we do want to give one more shout out, one more thanks to Agent Michael. We so much appreciate what you have done and all the people who gave. We appreciate, but
thank you.
When season two starts on TV, we're going to have a new setup. I'm so excited about this because it means
it makes Ben's life easier.
It really, really does. It really, really does. And I'm just so excited, and I'm so thankful. We really appreciate that you guys cared enough to help out. There are other ways to help out because we do have I do need to say a thank you. I need to bring that up here. So, Daniel, can you
– Yes.
Daniel, say something about our new podcast.
And if you can't get enough of us, you can always go to comicbooktimemachine.com, which is also available on iTunes, where you're going to hear us talk about, well, whatever comic books make us happy and give us fun, which are mostly the old stuff.
Mostly, but there are some new stuff will be creeping in there. Okay, I found what I need here. We do need to say thank you to people who left reviews on iTunes. We don't read our reviews from iTunes on here unless whoever has written a review has done something just unique and out of the ordinary, but we do appreciate all of them. And so we had a review from JHop71, and we want to thank you for the kind words. John Wilkerson, I thought he left one already before.
Well, he's a podcasting legend.
He is. And actually I was just listening to his homeschooling podcast today. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping he gets back on his Jesus Geek podcast that he keeps teasing, but because that's some good stuff. But
when he started podcasting, they used rocks.
Yeah, he's been around for a long time doing the podcasting thing. He's definitely a pioneer, or at least a voyager. I don't know, but yeah. So thank you to John Wilkerson as well. Thank you to Oh Captain, My Captain. Like that name. Although, oh, Captain, my Captain, if this next person hadn't left a review, oh, Captain, my Captain would be probably my favorite of the names that are here. But I do appreciate what you said, oh, Captain, my Captain. But this has to be my favorite name of iTunes reviewers. And that's thank you very much, Iron Man's Broken Antenna. Thank you for your review. His review was titled, "I'm Bringing the Party to You." So
thank you.
Yeah, but we appreciate all of those. And thank you so much for giving us those reviews and leaving us, you know, the stars. It helps people to find us. We really appreciate it. So, yeah, I think that's it then. I think we're going to close things down right now, and we'll be back in a week and a half or 2 weeks.
Or who knows?
Or who knows? It just depends on.
It'll be no longer than that.
It won't be any longer than 2 weeks. I know that.
Yeah, but there's the possibilities of emergencies in the next 2 weeks.
Emergencies?
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Dude, Comic-Con.
Oh, that's right. Except I'll be at camp.
Oh. Well, never mind.
Oh, Daniel, wait. What am I saying? What's today's date? It's the 23rd. Don't we have a movie coming soon?
We do.
Like in almost a week and a half.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll be back to talk. Our next episode will be about Guardians of the Galaxy. And then after that, it'll be Captain America. Oh, man. Well, I'm not going to edit that. But yeah, so our next episode,
Guardians of the Galaxy. In short, what you're hearing, fellow agents, is there's a lot going on. It seems like summer. It seems calm, but there's a lot.
I think our Guardians of the Galaxy episode, the news will be just talking about what came out of San Diego Comic-Con.
Or there will be no news at all.
Or there'll be no news at all.
Yep. So.
All right. Well, Daniel.
Well, I'll get to go borrow the time machine. I need to go back to 88.
Went back to 88. What for?
Well, I got to make sure I got the right issue of Manhunter.
Oh, I see. Well, as for me, Daniel, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening.
Gamma radiation. No, I can take care of that with my education. No, the problem comes when I turn big and green. It's a problem I have if I'm gonna be seen. Ooh, yeah. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry, when I get mad. Because of this problem I've always had. gotta take care of this problem way in advance. Where can I buy purple stretchy pants? Where can I buy purple stretchy pants? Got the U.S. Army chasing me down with tanks. I help people when I'm Hulk, but I get no thanks. All they see is the destruction I leave in my path. I'm in deep trouble for my actions of wrath. But without those stretchy pants, if I got caught by those soldiers, I would get charged with indecent exposure. Indecent exposure, yeah. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry, when I get mad. Because of this problem I've always had, I gotta take care of this problem way in advance. Where can I buy purple stretchy pants? Where can I buy purple stretchy pants? Purple stretchy pants, 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 purple and stretchy pants.
Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast, get productive in your personal and professional life, theorize over TV shows like Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Under the Dome, and of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Laugh with our clean comedy, delve into science fiction and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.
It's a magical place.